Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, it's Tuesday. We're live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, right here on FS1. 1 hour from now, one of my last Herd hierarchies of the year. 8 teams left. We'll rank them 1 through 8. Alabama will not make a list, although they were impressive last night. Joel Klatt stops by this hour. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. Congrats, Alabama. Nick Saban. It was fun watching.
About 3/4 of fun.
Well, yeah. But I enjoyed watching some future NFL stars last night, too.
A lot of them. Most of them Alabama wide
receivers.
Very excited
for Devontae Smith.
Yeah.
Welcome to Miami if they don't make moves to Tua.
So I was thinking yesterday during our show, the news broke that the Philadelphia Eagles had fired Doug Peterson. And one of the things I love about the NFL, and you really don't see this in any other league, you can be awful, but you're not awful for wrong if you get a quarterback or a coach. In baseball, you can get tied to awful contracts. In the NBA, you can't find a star. You're saddled with bad contracts. But in the NFL, you can cut guys. You don't have to be bad more than maybe a year. You can get out of it. Right coach, right coordinator. Look how fast Miami, the Dolphins were awful to interesting to really, really good. One of the top defenses in the NFL. And I'm thinking this yesterday during the show, Philadelphia fires their coach, and I'm thinking, oh, that's a great job. And then I'm driving home and I'm thinking, wait, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl and they fired him. And Andy Reid got to a Super Bowl and 5 NFC championships. And after one bad year, they fired him. And Chip Kelly had a winning record and they fired him. I'm not sure this is a great job. Expectations make the job. Tom Coughlin was allowed to have like 3-4 bad years in a row. They retained him. Doug Peterson beat Belichick in an all-time Super Bowl. He's now gone, and here's the owner after the dismissal yesterday.
Very few people probably after success deserve to lose their job. This is much more about the evaluation of whether the Eagles moving forward, our best option is to have a new coach. And that's really, really what it's about. It's not about, did Doug deserve to be let go? No, he did not deserve to be let go. That's not where I'm coming from. And that's not the bar in the evaluation process.
So he didn't deserve to be let go, but he was let go. I'm not sure this is a good job. And the more I thought about it, I thought, they've got a lot of cap space issues. They are sort of an old roster. The general manager has a lot of power in the owner's ear. And oh, by the way, you're stepping into a quarterback mess. Most coaches want personnel say. You'll get none. Most quarterbacks want to define quarterback room. They're the opposite. I don't know. The NFL changes so quickly. If Urban Meyer landed the Jacksonville job today, with Trevor Lawrence coming, that looks like a pretty decent job. We never thought the Chargers was a great job, and then they drafted Justin Herbert. And now I think it's the best job going away. But I would have thought at the beginning of this year, if you'd have told me Philadelphia, I'd be like, well, you got Carson Wentz, you got great owner, competent general manager, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl. And this morning I'm like, wait a minute. The owner is saying he didn't deserve to be fired. Then why'd you fire him? Three coaches, the last three coaches fired there, all had winning records. 2 got to Super Bowls. 1 won it. All of them, after one bad year, out. Tough talk and tough act in New York gave Coughlin bad year after bad year after bad year after bad year. I don't know. This league changes dramatically. I'm not sure this is a great job. Eric Bieniemy, Brian Daboll, let some young coach who doesn't want any personnel say, have this gig. You'll have better options. Congrats to Alabama, won a national championship. We do this a lot of times. I remember getting almost into a fight 20 years ago. I was at Senior Froggies or something in Tampa. I was a sportscaster there. And some, mouth breather came up to me and said, Danny Werfel should be drafted number one. He's unbelievable. And I said, Danny Werfel is a bad athlete with a noodle arm. Well, he dominates in college. And I said, it's in college. It's Steve Spurrier. Doesn't mean anything. A lot of guys dominate in college. And he was just adamant. And I'm like, it doesn't matter if you're throwing to wide open wide receivers that Steve Spurrier's got four wide. Nobody could cover him at the time. Doesn't make a good NFL prospect. And I watched Mac Jones last night for Alabama. And my take is, how the hell do you evaluate him? He never plays from behind. Ever. He never gets hurried. Forget hit. He's always got a great running game. And his wide receivers are wide open. He's not a sensational athlete. In fact, he's below average. He was a three-star recruit. His arm is fine, not special. His size is okay. The best thing he has going for him, he's going to drop to about 15th. So he may end up with a San Francisco or a New England situation. But even New England, they have no weapons. He's not dynamic enough to make something out of nothing. He is the classic example where Mac Jones lands will absolutely determine his fate. He needs a clever coach. He needs protection. Essentially, what he has at Alabama is the opposite of the NFL reality. He never trails. His receivers are always open. He's almost never hurried. And he has a great running game. God, Joe Burrow would just like one of those. Forget not having the right coach. He's got the best coach ever in college football. When you look around the NFL landscape, what I'm about to say is not a coincidence. Patrick Mahomes did not go to a college football power. Josh Allen did not go to a college football power. Lamar Jackson did not go to a college football power. Either did Big Ben or Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees or Matt Ryan. No, they were always trailing, often getting hit, having to squeeze the ball into tight, tiny windows. Even Justin Herbert had a good program. Oregon's absolutely a top 12 program, but he didn't have NFL wide receivers to throw to. He had a very conservative coach. And that's why everybody out of college said, Justin Herbert, he's very rigid. He's very mechanical. Yeah, he's a great athlete. Justin Herbert's a great athlete. And you said he was mechanical. Mac Jones is a below average athlete. And everybody this morning is, oh, five touchdowns, no interceptions. Justin Herbert's bigger, stronger, better arm, more mobile. And we cut him up out of college. Because he came out of a program where nobody was wide open, and he often played trailing, and he didn't have an unbelievable run game, and he didn't have the best coach in the history of college football. I would take Justin Fields every day and twice on Sundays over Mac Jones, and he didn't play particularly well. But if you start looking around the NFL, there is a reason there are not a lot of great Alabama quarterbacks in the NFL, not a lot of great Ohio State quarterbacks in the NFL. There's not a lot of great college football power quarterbacks in the NFL. Because the college reality for a lot of these guys like Mac Jones is leads, running game, wide open, best coach. You think you're going to get that drafted in the top 12 in the NFL? I don't even know who's going to be coaching Detroit next year. So I wish the kid the very best, but I don't know how you evaluate him. I really don't. He'll be the classic example. He'll be as good as the coach, the owner, and the offensive line and skill people that he inherits. Because I'm watching this last night. Look at this. I mean, come on now. Linebackers on Devontae Smith. That's not the way it works in the NFL.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
A couple of stories developed over the weekend, and they continue to develop. Chris Mortensen reported Sunday that Deshaun Watson would absolutely consider a move to the Miami Dolphins. He could play hardball with Houston, and Miami's one of the places he's interested in. I think that's a very interesting, random story that developed. Pro Football Focus today in their mock draft has Justin Fields, Ohio State quarterback, going to the Miami Dolphins. Again, kind of strange, everything lining up with Miami. Generally, I think you got to give young people time to develop. A lot of people are late bloomers. But there are industries and cultural changes where you can demand more from kids. And I would say NFL quarterback is one of those. Tua is 6-3 in 9 games. But he doesn't look special. And you say, that's 9 games. Well, first of all, he's had almost 600 snaps. And he has 300 passes. That is a lot of footage. That's a lot of footage. Folks, there are people that believe in Bigfoot and have seen him pass through a forest in 2 seconds. 600 snaps, 300 passes is all hours of footage. And there's no special there. But there's two reasons I'm okay with it, being tough on Tua. Number one is the 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old high school quarterback industry has exploded. My kids are much smarter than me. My kids are much more aware than me. Why? Because of global technology that allows them to talk to kids in Russia, Ukraine, Australia. I couldn't. You sent letters, found a pen pal. They can talk to the president if they wanted to. Kids should be held to certain higher standards today because of the information available to them. And quarterbacks should be held to a quicker, higher standard. You now have people telling you, how to take the Wonderlic, how to interview, how to eat, how to throw, how to train, how to recover. It didn't happen 20 years ago. And the other thing is, again, we've got, I know what you're telling me. He's only played 9 games. Colony's got a winning record. What about Josh Allen? But Josh Allen exploded into this league. He was unrefined. He didn't have polish. He needed coaching. But he was 6'6 with a cannon arm running and jumping over people. And the reality right now with Tua is, if you're Miami and you'll never have this number 3 pick again, do you look at Josh Allen and go, next 10 years, I got to play him 20 times? I mean, the last game of the year, regular season, was Tua against Josh Allen. Miami's defense, which was great, could not stop Josh Allen. Translation, we're going to be in some shootouts with Josh Allen a lot. The other thing is, we know in the NFL, if I said to you in the NFL, okay, there's this team. Defense, excellent. Special teams, excellent. Coach, excellent. Didn't make the playoffs. Oh, who's the quarterback? That's where Miami is today.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like. Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 8.
Well, they have the best defense, in my opinion. The L.A. Rams, I would put at number 8. 7 straight games with multiple sacks. They've held opponents under 15 points last 5 weeks. But the problem is, they're the weakest team at the most important position, quarterback. Jared Goff, broken thumb. It had swelling. And the reality, over the last 6 games, Jared Goff, 5 touchdowns, 5 picks. And they're not dynamic at all. Now, I do love Cam Akers. And I think if you can run the football against Green Bay, you can make it competitive. But at some point, they're a little slicker version of the Bears. They feel incredibly lopsided. They have an offensive coach. They have a great defense. And you're kind of a liability at quarterback, Rams number 8.
Number 7.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady. They only have 1 win against the team with a winning record this year, and that was the Packers in Week 6. They have beat up on some bad teams. Now, I do think Brady's playing well. The emergence of Antonio Brown is something. Brady's experience in this stage is good. And there's almost a break, if you can call it that. Getting to face a team that's routed you twice, it's a little bit of a break getting to face the Saints again instead of going up against the team you crushed at Lambeau, which I wouldn't like that at all. Brady has 200-plus passing yards in the first half in three straight games, so he is cooking, and that is good news for them, Tampa at 7.
Number 6.
And then it gets tight. I'd put Cleveland at 6 because they're the least experienced team left, but they're getting smarter. They're 11-0 this year when they win or tie the turnover battle. Turnovers are being diminished. They have the best offensive line remaining in the playoffs. And Baker, since week 8, 14 TDs and a pick. I think they're well coached. I think they're smart. But I do think this weekend feels a little bit like end of the road. They felt like a playoff team, maybe a playoff win. They got it. But they just don't have a ton of experience. And they're facing the world champions next.
Number 5.
Baltimore, they beat Cleveland a couple times, so they outrushed the Titans 240 yards to 50, and that's just hard to do. I think Lamar Jackson's always been dynamic, but I thought he played with a self-awareness Sunday. It wasn't about him trailing, it was about him leading. Ball security, made really good decisions, and their defense held Derrick Henry to a season-low 40 rushing yards. So they've got a lot of components for a Super Bowl team. They're dynamic at quarterback. They can own time of possession. They have a Super Bowl-winning coach. They play real defense and usually have a pass rush. I have Baltimore at 5.
Number 4.
New Orleans. Now, they're not going to throw the ball over the top, so there are limitations there. They held the ball, though, for 40 minutes against the Bears. That's most time of possession by any team in the wild card weekend. And the last 2 weeks, they've held opponents under 10 points. So I worry about their inability to be more than a gadget offense with Taysom Hill, Drew Brees, to Alvin Kamara. But I've said before, and I'll say it again, I believe they have the best roster in the National Football League. And both sides of the ball are filled with high-end Pro Bowl-level players.
Number 3.
Kansas City. I've had them there for a while. Worst red zone defense in the NFL this year. And they rank 24th in the red zone offensively since week 12. Something's not right. Is it a lack of running game? Is it the injury to Mitchell Schwartz? Have people figured out some of their trick plays? Is it a play-calling issue? Something doesn't feel right, and they are the rustiest team in the league because Patrick Mahomes took off week 17. Aaron Rodgers got a bye, but he played in week 17, so I just don't know what I'm going to get. Mahomes had 5 turnovers in his last 3 games and a completion percentage under 60%. Something isn't clicking.
Number 2.
I'm going to move Buffalo down one spot because I am concerned about a lack of a pass rush. Now, some of that is the Colts' offensive line. Josh Allen's had multiple touchdowns in 6 straight games. They've won 7 straight, longest winning streak in the NFL. I think they're explosive offensively, well-coached. They're very good situationally in the red zone on defense, special teams more than capable. But they didn't generate much of a pass rush. And I do think that could be trouble against Baltimore this weekend. If they don't force Lamar Jackson to be uncomfortable, you're going to get his dynamic athletic ability and time to throw. And that worries me, Buffalo at 2.
Number 1.
I think the only choice here is Green Bay. Not only the number 1 offense, they only turn the ball over 11 times all year. They have the second highest graded offensive line to the Cleveland Browns. And their defense in 4 of the last 5 games is emerging as a top unit, held people under 20 points. I don't see a lot of problems. Now, I do worry they are at times very reliant on Devontae Adams at wide receiver. If he got tweaked, if he got injured, it wouldn't feel like the same football team. But all in, I think Green Bay is the best team. Let's look at the board one more time. Here we go. Green Bay number 1. Buffalo, Kansas City, Saints, Baltimore, Cleveland, Tampa Bay 7, and the Rams at number 8. The Rams, I said this yesterday, they've done so many things right. I mean, they have big trades of work. They've drafted really well. They got a great coach, the stadium. They've re-signed people. They had an injury to Andrew Whitworth, but they drafted a kid. He filled in. They were more than capable. But when your quarterback's struggling and not playing with confidence and the staff doesn't trust him, it just, they feel like a BB gun going up against, you know, whatever Aaron Rodgers is classified as. So I just don't see him winning there. By the way, I saw this. Like, I understand when you're young, and you have money and you're talented, you're good looking, you get a little cocky. But you know, after you lose a game and get humiliated, you should be marginally humble. I saw Chase Claypool, great receiver for the Steelers, took to TikTok Live on Monday following his team's drubbing to Cleveland. He said, bad loss, but the Browns are going to get clapped next week anyway, so it's all good. Pittsburgh's starting to wear me out. All the TikTok stars, trash talking after you get humiliated. Listen, Le'Veon Bell left. You're still noisy. Antonio Brown left. You're still noisy. Like, some of this is Big Ben. Maybe some of it's the culture created by Mike Tomlin. All the guys that were purportedly the problem have left, and you still have the best TikTok ensemble in the NFL. I don't know. There's a lot of big NFL brands right now where the brand is way better than the quality of football. The Cowboys, the Steelers, the Bears, the Eagles. The brand is bigger than a reality. And things are not going to change unless you remove the people who appear to be accepting this behavior. This is now just an underachieving, noisy franchise that lacks maturity, always wants to blame the last guy they kicked out of the town. It's Le'Veon Bell's fault. Not really. They haven't rushed the ball since he left. It's Antonio Brown's fault. It took him a while, but he's in Tampa doing just fine. Cleveland rolled you. Just stop talking. If you won, say what you want. But Cleveland rolled you in your place. A lot of your stars rested. It's not really the time. Cleveland owned it, owned you, deserved it, and I think, frankly, has a shot against Kansas City.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, one of the really interesting guys when I used to work at the other place, do you remember John Ritchie Goulet? We'd bring him on as a guest. Very unique personality, super smart guy, went to Stanford, Michigan, super smart guy. And he was like a fullback. He was 7 years in the NFL, some Raiders. 4 straight years he was in the playoffs. If you watch playoff games, you'd see John Ritchie. But what I always loved about him, he was a free spirit. And he needed to be in the media because he was very outspoken and he had crazy hair. And I just talked to him a minute ago. I want to bring him on live. Former Eagle fullback John Ritchie. I love his hair. And he said his daughter cut it. And I honestly, God, I think you look fantastic. First of all, you've lost some weight because you were a big fullback.
And I was husky. I was very husky. I was when we were working together, or when I was trying to work close to you, I was probably 270. I got up to 3 bills.
Wow.
And now I'm about 210, 215.
Oh, my God. You look fantastic. And congrats to your daughter, because the whole thing's working here for me. All right, let's start with this. Let's start with this. I said today, when the story first broke yesterday, I said, oh, Eagles is a great job. And then I'm hearing Jeffrey Lurie say, well, he didn't deserve to get fired. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. So Chip Kelly had a winning record. Doug Peterson had a winning record. Andy Reid had a winning record. They all had a bad season, and they got whacked. And I'm like, is this a great job, or is it a job that has, John, unrealistic expectations and pressure?
Yeah, it gets unrealistic in Philadelphia, no question about it. But I believe that Doug's job performance this season did merit consideration of the chopping block. I was shocked, though, that they actually went there, especially after last week when Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson had the press conference showing solidarity. That was the Monday after the tank game when they got out there in public and basically, I don't know, showed this front of propriety and everything being status quo. I think something had to happen last week during the, you know, from Tuesday on. Now, Doug met with our owner, Jeffrey Lurie, last Tuesday, and then things sort of devolved from there. And what we can gather is that Doug got sick of people telling him what to do.
Yeah.
You know, this is an organization at this point that it's run by the mathlete Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie, the owner. And there's no secret about that any longer.
Yeah.
And Doug was a great soldier. And Doug was a great coach here. But when you don't have say over who your staff is, and you don't have – they took advantage of him. They chopped his knees out at every turn. There was insubordination in the coaching ranks. There were reports that the coaches that Howie hired were sort of undermining Doug behind the scenes. It was a mess. No one knew what a mess it was because Doug put on such a great front for so long. It's miraculous he made it as long as he did in terms of how much dysfunction there was in place.
See, this is why I love bringing local guys on. All this information that we don't get, John here is delivering.
Yeah.
By the way, 4 hours a day, which is not easy, with Joe DeCamara, who's a big legendary pro in Philadelphia. So there's a big show on WIP Radio. So
yes.
Got to give you a lot of love because you guys...
Well, thanks, Colin.
You crush. Okay, so now... Philadelphia is a little crazy town in their conspiracy theories, but I'm always up for one, John. So there's a little conspiracy theory on Jalen Hurts and maybe something going on. Can you explain to our audience?
Total conspiracy theory. This was formulated today on our show, and really nothing to substantiate it other than Joe Banner tweeting out, you know, Joe Banner, who knows the way our owner here in Philadelphia works, having worked for him for a long time and childhood friends with Jeffrey Lurie. He said that he didn't think this move to fire Doug Peterson would have been made had there not been a slam dunk guaranteed plan in place, like they already knew the guy was going to agree to the job as the head guy with the Eagles. And I'm just thinking, you know, just putting two and two together, there was so much consternation over the Jalen Hurts pick. Like, why in the world would you go there? Well, if the sure thing was a handshake, wink, wink with Lincoln Riley way back when, it does. They didn't know if there was going to be a college season at that point. It sort of enlightens some of that murky decision making from the time. But again, total conspiracy theory, and it's you can have it if you want.
Listen, not only will I take it, I won't give you any credit. I'll just, from this point forward, it's mine.
All yours, Colin.
Now, here's one. So during the, because I talk a lot of Eagles and get a lot of hate from Philadelphia, but I kind of like it and stuff.
Oh, you do?
I do. And so I was always a Carson Wentz fan, but I did acknowledge at some point it's broken. Like, it's confidence, the Nick Foles statue, they draft Jalen Hurts, something's not right. Did you bail on Wentz? What's the, if you took the temperature of the city of Philadelphia this morning, Wentz, Jalen Hurts, who do they want? What's your gut?
Everyone wanted Jalen Hurts after he beat the Saints, and then the next several weeks ensued where things came crashing back down to reality and teams had tape on him and teams started mush rushing him and he didn't necessarily look like he knew what to do with the ball.
Sure.
This, I would say it's split 50-50 in Philadelphia.
Wow.
There are those who believe that Carson Wentz will be back, that he had something to do with the Doug Peterson firing. You've got those conspiracists on one side, and you've got people who say that this team plays better for around Jalen Hurts, that he is the right man for the job. I personally believe that you're paying tens of millions of dollars to Carson Wentz anyway. If you're the owner, you want to try to make that work however possible, so that this new coaching hire has a lot to do with who can do the best job of resuscitating Carson Wentz's ability to look like a top three quarterback in the NFL.
Let me throw this one at you. It's just so funny because I've always considered the Eagles really well run. And then John Goulet today threw this at me. They haven't drafted a Pro Bowler in 7 years except Carson Wentz, Howie Roseman.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, they got a Patriots issue going on here. Let's just talk about the personnel. I could make the argument. Little cap mess, little old, not a lot of young stars. is this potentially, for the next several years, John, just an average roster? Or is there something they're missing?
Oh, it's worse than that, Colin. This roster is bottom five in the NFL,
wow,
if you ask me, for, you know, moving forward with the lack of talent. Like you said, the age. Think about we are in the second worst predicament cap wise in the NFL for 2021. Some of the guys who are good are going to have to go because the Eagles won't be able to pay them. So the roster's already bad. Yeah, the bottom line is we don't know who's making the picks anymore. You know, we thought that Howie Roseman was the GM. They took a long time to call him a GM. But now we're hearing rumors that Jeffrey Lurie makes some of the picks here and there. And fingers are pointing all over the place. This is a bad roster. And the parts that are good are old. We thought that Carson Wentz was the gem of the team and the gem of the NFL, the future. And now we're wondering if he's broken himself. He was the redeeming part of the roster. Yeah, the offensive line was horrendous this year. Fortunately, some of those guys get healthy. And, you know, when you get Lane Johnson back, you get Brooks back at guard. But that should help Carson's cause. But defensively speaking, there's nothing aside from Fletcher Cox. You've got Darius Slay at cornerback and then nine other guys who are going to be bottom of the barrel. You can't pay them anything close to what a good starter earns in this league. It's a sad state of affairs because, again, we are being run into the ground by the mathlete Howie Roseman.
Wow. Isn't it amazing when you go local and you hear all these stories? I love this. This is one of my, we do this regularly on this show. Before I let you go, you went to Michigan and Stanford. So if you and I,
yes,
did a show, you would be way smarter than me as the football player, and I would be just holding on for dear life. So this Joe DeCamara, he must be a handful of brain power because he deals with you.
No, Joe DeCamara, he does all the talking, and I nod in agreement for the most part. But, Colin, you got to remember, I smashed my face into people for the good part of 20 years. I got dumber.
I love John Ritchie. And by the way, you're also stylish. That's the nicest jacket anybody's worn on the show. And let me see your hands.
It's silky.
It's really nice. Look at your rings. You're like a rock star. But
sort of.
Yeah.
I'd like to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A rock star.
I rock out a little bit.
With a bench press. All right, buddy. You were great today. I appreciate it, man. Good luck to you.
Thanks, Colin. I love you, man.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So there's a bunch of different coaching. Seven teams looking for a new head coach. We thought it was six until Philadelphia shocked us yesterday and made the decision. So we're going to grade them, Joe. We're going to grade each head coaching opening.
Professor Colin, what grade are you giving the Eagles opening?
Well, after John Ritchie's interview, I probably should downgrade this a little. I had a C+ before I had John Ritchie. I do think they have a capable, smart owner, and Carson Wentz is talented. And by the way, Darius Slay is a great corner, and Fletcher Cox a great defensive lineman. You could argue the Rams have Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, so they do have two great players at defensive line and corner. So do the Rams. That's a really nice building block. But they're over the cap. Their wide receiving core was the lowest rated in the NFL. And I'll be honest with you, offensively, their best offensive lineman, Lane Johnson's always hurt. Brandon Brooks just came off an injury. They drafted a top left tackle a few years ago. Andre Dillard, I think, is his name. They need him to play. But they have to address the offensive line fast.
What grade are you giving the Lions opening?
This is the worst opening. I would say a D+. You have Matt Stafford, so there's something there. But they've been in last place three straight years. The defense, despite the fact Matt Patricia was a defensive guy, has gotten worse. I just think it's a losing culture. They've had one winning coach since 1975. That's Jim Caldwell. So there's not apathy. People care. But they just, to me, Detroit and Cleveland before this year, like, they're the most dysfunctional organizations. I mean, you can say Washington, but Washington's won a division or three in the last, couple decades.
What grade are you giving the Falcons opening?
Well, I like the owner and Matt Ryan's a top 12 quarterback, so I'd say it's a B minus. They're $25 million over the cap, three straight losing seasons. Their pass rush is not great, and their secondary is bad. The good news is they have got a top four pick, so they can either get a quarterback or they can get the best left tackle maybe in the decade out of college, Penei Sewell. So they do have, and or they can move down with that pick. If they want to stay with Matt Ryan, somebody comes up. So I think their draft pick, it feels like a C job, but I think that draft pick is real leverage. It's a little bit of a gold bar, and I do think Arthur Blank is a stable owner.
What grade are you giving the Jets opening?
Now, I'm going to give it a C minus, and you say, why not a D? They got a lot of draft picks. They have the number two draft pick, and they got $70 million in cap space. So if you got the right coach, you got a lot of money and a lot of draft picks. That's in this league, it is hard to screw up a lot of draft picks and a lot of money. You're going to hit some of them. The other thing is their GM Joe Douglas is not overly needy or forceful. I thought he had a very good draft for the Jets last year. They hit on a couple of secondary guys. The left tackle's a work in progress, but he's got talent. So I think you have a very capable GM who's not power hungry. So you can walk in and have real communication with your GM, and he'll probably ask your opinion on things.
What about the Texans opening?
Well, this is about Deshaun Watson. So if I have Deshaun Watson, that's a B. I would give it a higher grade, but they have to rebuild their offensive line. You got one more year of J.J. Watt. But here's the good news. They led the NFL in yards per play. Why Deshaun Watson? Here's the other good news. They led the NFL in passing yards this season. So again, everybody wants a dynamic quarterback. I've got that. Don't love the owner. Don't love the front office. I think I'd move J.J. Watt. But I get a star quarterback, a star left tackle. And in this league, you can do everything right and be bad at left tackle and quarterback, and you're bad. You can do everything wrong, and I get Deshaun and a good left tackle, Laremy Tunsil, and I'm like, I'm a draft away from being okay if I can solve the offensive front.
What grade are you giving the Jaguars opening?
Should be better, but a B minus. I mean, again, you got the number one pick. You're going to get Trevor Lawrence, and you got $73 million in cap space. This should be an A++ job, but there's just an apathy around the organization. I mean, here's an organization that's had one winning season in 13 years. They kept their GM. They kept their coach. It's a college football, high school football town. And so there's no demand for, you know, the media has no power. Sometimes that can go overboard, but it's nice. This is why the SEC is so good, beyond having a good high school programs everywhere in the South, is that the fans are demanding, is that you've got to get good coaches, and if you don't, the fans voice their opinion. Nobody cares in Jacksonville, so I do think if they got Urban, that cap space, and Trevor Lawrence, they'd win 9-10 games for the next 10 years, but would anybody care?
How about the Chargers opening?
This is about as good an opening as you can have. I get Justin Herbert. I get over $25 million in cap space. They have several stars under contract. Joey Bosa, Keenan Allen. I get Justin Herbert. And by the way, I was reading this morning. 16 of their 20 losses the last 2 years have been by a possession. So they've led a lot of games against a lot of good teams. And I think most people agree that's the opening.
This is the best job.
And the Spanos, they're not huge spenders on the free agent market, but they're not meddly. They're not like on you all the time. They're kind of sometimes you wish they were willing to spend more money, but maybe that'll change in Los Angeles.